Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
Robert is being chased, thrown on the run, and it is caught! Touchdown! Keenan Allen, what a great...
My goal is not to break you, my goal is to make you harder to break.
Comes back, number six!
Huge sack by Joey Bosa.
90-yard touchdown! 90-yard touchdown!
Picked off at the 8-yard line by Derwin James.
Sets his feet, takes a shot downfield, has night.
Caught! Touchdown, Chargers!
Grab your lunch boxes and go attack this day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
You like that?
Yeah, we're four interceptions. We like some of it. Golly, if last week was rough, this one was the proverbial duckling. Coming off a short break, the Chargers headed across country to not quite the East Coast, Al, but Atlanta. And on the back of four defensive turnovers, steal a victory 17-13 over the Falcons. We're here to break it all down for you. I am Andy. I'm joined by Jack and Alistair. And welcome to the Thunder Down Under Chargers podcast. And yeesh, despite the favorable result, there are things aplenty to unpack from this one, especially on that offensive side of the ball. Hey, Jackie boy. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. Yes, it was. Sorry. I didn't realize your intro had finished there. That sort of was kind of symbolic of the offense itself. Sort of failed to start when asked. I kind of felt like both quarterbacks went...
Good save, Jack. Good save.
Who am I worse than? And I think Kirk Cousins kind of proved that he is now perhaps a backup quarterback. And the Falcons might be sitting there with Michael Penix, might play in a couple of weeks and going, see, this is why we drafted him so highly. But it was an incredible defensive performance from both sides. I actually thought the Falcons played really, really well. And we just played better. It was kind of like Justin Herbert didn't play as bad as Kirk Cousins, and our defense played better than the Falcons' defense. So a little bit worrisome at the start because you couldn't perhaps write a worse way to start a game with the fumble and stalling and going, oh, what could be unraveling here? But this is the Harbaugh team. This is not a Staley-led team. And we got the dub.
Love it. That's where I want to start as well. Glad that you started with Kirk, Andy, because after the game, I did a, you know, bit of a braggadocious, to borrow a Jack word, post saying, oh, Kirk was out to show that he's a backup. And a few people liked the post. And then one person in the comments was like, oh, yeah, right, mate, paying out on Kirk Cousins when Herbert did nothing. And I said, that's a bit of a weird response. And then I said, well, I responded, of course, I can't hold my tongue. And then the person responded again and basically said, oh, yeah, good take, you clowns. I was like, all right, so I think we found Kirk Cousins' burner account, or it might have been his wife's, but Kirk didn't play well. And I do agree with you, Jack. This is not your garden variety Chargers team over the last 10 years. And I've noticed that the general tenor of the fan base is to have been disappointed with how stagnant the offense was, and I get it. But this stuff really matters, guys. This happens in the NFL. Even the Super Bowl winning Chiefs last year, when they were 6-2, they lost 24-9 traveling to Denver in week 9. Games like this happen in the NFL where you've had 10 days less rest than your opponent. You travel across the country, Jack. You called it. You said this might not be an easy game. And then you come out and fumble on the opening drive and you go down 7-0. How many Chargers teams come back and win that game rather than finding a way to lose it? Not many I can remember. So that's why I feel completely different about this team. And it's why I don't even care that much the way the offense played, because each game is an island unto itself. The way this game manifested itself was a game where the teams were rusty and slow and the defense had to carry the day, and they did, Andy. They got the job done.
Yeah, and look, right from the outset, it was frustrating watching Robinson prove a headache as we sort of expected him in the run game, easy yards through dump-offs, but Tony Jefferson, Troy Dye really set the standard from a tackling perspective. And look, Zach Robinson thought, let's just run the ball and keep the throws short. Let's not try and force Kirk into doing anything too extreme, and it was working. But look, the resolve of the defensive unit, as you said, Al, is pretty spectacular to see that even though the offense wasn't going, they just continued to find ways to maintain the pressure, force turnovers, and essentially put the rest of the team on their back and win the game. So it was very refreshing to look, choked down that win, I guess. But hey, we're sitting at 8-4, and for the first time since 2018, it's a pretty magical feeling.
100%. And, you know, let's stay on this, the defense, because they really are the bell of the ball. We've been waiting for it, and we've been waiting for it. I'm almost going to say back when we played Pittsburgh away, that would have been two-ish years ago now, where Derwin James came out and just had a transformative performance on the field, essentially won the game for us, I think, with some of his play in it was a bit of a cold game from memory. We got it. We got Derwin James. We got vintage Derwin James. We got an INT from him. He was tackling hard, and a video has just come out recently on social media. Josh Allen, the biggest quarterback in the league, he's playing a round of golf, and someone asks him, "Hey, who's the hardest hitter in the game?" He goes, "No doubt it's Derwin James." So it was wonderful to see him kind of retake the mantle, and I think he's slowly been building to this performance. It doesn't feel like it was just sort of out of the blue. He's been increasing his ability, playing in the slot, playing that nickel in and around the ball, and he's just starting to read it like he did those in when he was, you know, arguably the best safety in the game all that time ago. So well done, Derwin James. Kind of an unsung. We haven't really talked about him too much on this podcast, and I've got to eat my humble pie because I said, well, you know, was it a year ago, saying, well, maybe this defense is better without Derwin James. Maybe we need to get rid of him. But obviously, he's playing fantastic football under Jesse Minter.
It's hand up. I've got to do the same. I mean, we were talking about this, just the interesting hypothetical. We're filling time in our shows. Is this guy's contract worth it? Does he stay with the team next year? What are the pros and cons? He plays like that, then it's not even a question. He puts it to bed. Arguably the best game of his career. It's one of them. If you just look at your PFF grading or the fact he didn't miss a tackle and the quality of the plays, those end-around tackles for loss were huge. So the one on Drake London, the interception in the game, and as Jim Harbaugh said, he wants to get that photo framed of him high-pointing the ball. Man, all of the good vibes, all of the good feels. So 8-4, man, very excited about Derwin James. He's killing it.
Yeah, not many, if any, can, you know, deconstruct a block and take Drake London, who's not a small guy, down with one arm to the knee for that tackle for loss, and had another one in the run game. Just, you know, that the athleticism, the speed that he exposes off the line, crashing in, and just, you know, was awesome to watch. I've been hoping for a Derwin resurgence for some time. I think, look, to your credit, Jack, it's fair to pose that question. Is it worth paying him as one of the highest safeties in the league when he has been underperforming, especially with the team having some salary cap constrictions, you know, the last couple of years?
Putting it nicely, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
And when whichever bit part safety step in have an impact, right?
Yeah.
That's an argument too. If you can pull Molden from the street and Marcus May from the street and Tony Jefferson from the practice squad, you start to think maybe the coaching staff's just so good. Do we need to spend $20 million at this position?
Yeah, but I think that he just shows such versatility. And when he comes out and has a game like that, you go, it's all justifiable because, you know, it was a very well-rounded defensive effort. No question about it. But he just made some super special plays that really killed drives or made it harder for the fourth down aggression to, you know, have to think on the other side of the ball. So, look, fair question, Jack, but
let me go to the intangibles. Let me go to the intangibles because I always like the intangibles. It's not about how much money and how with the PFF grading. It's about the leadership. It's about the player in the locker room providing support and motivation for his teammates. And that's something that Harbaugh was just singing his praises. And from memory, that's what I did say, is that, hey, if he's costing $20 million, listen, his performance might not be backing that up, but it's what is he providing off the field in the locker room, that motivation. That's intangible.
Can I give an example of it? In the post-game locker room interviews, I can't remember the player, but said that Derwin, when Marcus May arrived this week, he's had his head in the books for 3 days trying to get up to speed so he can play on Sunday. And Derwin just said, "I don't care, man. I got you. Doesn't matter what the play is. I'm going to turn around and say, deep third, down the pipe. whatever the thing is, I'll make sure you know what the play call is so you're in position. And he's the guy who clearly does that for the whole team. Heart and soul player. You don't get rid of those guys because they don't grow on trees. You're lucky to have one. And I think this organization with Mac and Herbert might have at least three, which is championship fodder one day.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that, having them on both sides of the ball deeply entrenched is pretty spectacular. Further on the defensive side, allowing 116 yards on 37 carries at 3.1 attempt. When you put it that way, it's not too bad, right? Mm. There was a couple of borderline explosive runs, a couple of, you know, 10 plus. But look, I said last week that we're going to have to look for the runs behind right guard, right tackle.
Mm.
A lot of the damage came to the center and the inside the left guard. 81% of all their yards gained came sort of either side of the center or just outside their left guard. And almost 78% of those yards, or the yards after contact. So where we have a great game from the defensive tackles last week, we have the edges really, you know, controlling the perimeter of the line. And then a little bit of a step back from the likes of Abonya, Tart, Ford, Morgan Fox. How do we feel about the game that the line had across the whole, Jack?
Well, I mean, to be fair, I know that you might think that the center of the defense was a little bit leaky, and it was, and that's fair, but you're also going up against one of my picks for offensive player of the year. We might get into that a little later on, which is Bijan Robinson, who's having
foreshadowing how right I was. Here it's coming. Yeah.
just as good as Derek Henry and Saquon Barkley. So you expect that. But I think where the interior shone this week was getting pressure on Kirk Cousins. Puna Ford had another outstanding day getting pressure up the middle, I thought. And it was a big reason why Kirk threw those four interceptions. So whilst the run defense, I mean, listen, and the Atlanta line is no slouch either. I think it's sort of a middling line. Listen, you can't have it all the time, but yeah, I thought Puna was I didn't watch a lot of defense this week. I was mainly focused on the offense on the all 22. We'll talk about that soon, but I did see that Puna did get that interior push. Tier Tart, not so much. Mac and Bosa, a little bit quieter, but you know, apples and oranges. You know, last week we needed a stout interior line. This week we got some more interior pass rush, which arguably, you know, won the game.
I want to diverge from you slightly, not completely contradictory, but I think one of the challenges from this game was that Cousins only got pressured on 7 of his 40 dropbacks, which is 17.5% of them. And I don't think that's going to cut it against the best quarterbacks. 3 of Cousins' interceptions came from clean pockets, which is highly unusual. And we were watching, I'm sure listeners, you were all watching, a few of those interceptions were just diabolical, where you thought, why did he do that? How did he do that? Trent Green, I mean, we know that color commentators are loathe to explicitly criticize players. He was like, he said after the third one with Marcus May's interception, yeah, I have no idea what he was seeing on that throw or why he did that. He says it all. So
triple coverage or...
It was wild. And he threw it soft. He threw it soft as. So I am still seeing, watching the games, that Mac is clearly returning from his groin, and even though he's being a stalwart, as Harbour would say, he's not the Mac from earlier in the year. Bosa, I'm seeing a completely different player. He looks like 60% of himself out there, and I'm concerned that Bud Dupree, if you just looked at Bud Dupree game to game, I'm not sure he's been that great a signing. He's had the occasional game where he stepped up. I know there was the 2-sack game that escapes me currently. But week to week, there are games he goes missing. And I think this is going to hurt the team in the future. But thankfully, the second and third level stepped up this week. So that's a slight gloss on what you had to say, Jack.
Yeah. Well, we'll move from the line into the middle of the field, because I thought Deion Henley was everywhere again. Troy Dye really stepped up, had 10 plus tackles, looked really physical, had a great takedown on Bijan in the open field. But that secondary was pretty grabby from Christian Fulton again, which is a concern. Yeah. But Ty Heap still, man, what a heck of a game. Just like every week we're talking Ty Heap still, and he was sensational. Two picks, 62-yard pick six, great pass breakup. Like, man, Ty Heap steal in the fifth round.
The chase what down of it? McLeod, that was the one I didn't really notice until the rewatch. He lays that tackle. This is the one where he tried to intercept it, just misses 50-yard completion. He's the guy who chased down the field and laid the tackle about 8 yards from the end zone where three of his mates missed tackles. Jasir Taylor, not naming names. Jack, you're about to be contrite, I think. What were you
I wasn't. The only negative, and this, I'm a little bit worried, and I don't know how much of an impact his injury has put on his performance, but Christian Fulton continues to just give away really silly penalties. He had a couple of good pass breakups, a couple of really good plays. Yep. So I don't know what's happened, whether he's just worried about his agility and his speed. I'm hoping that because he is more of a veteran, he can perhaps just, if he's playing at 85, 90%, hopefully, you know, against the Chiefs, he can be back to 100%, because, you know, Mahomes is just going to throw it his way. He's going to force him and he's going to try and, you know, he'll give away a penalty at some stupid position and the Chiefs might win. Anyway, but yeah, Taheb still, what did he have? Was he ranked the 258th player in the draft or something? As of right now, of all the DBs or cornerbacks that have been drafted in 2024, per PFF, he is number one in the league. And to your point, Andy, that is not a still. That is a still steal, baby. Amazing.
It's wonderful.
I liked it.
Reuse my joke and make it worse. Nice.
That's what I do. That's what I'm here to do.
On Fulton, quickly. I like that you pointed out he had one or two good snaps, because he did. There was an pass breakup on London late in the third quarter.
Was that but hand in there? Yeah.
Spot on, which was very good. But I think I'm getting those Chris Harris Jr. vibes, where it's okay if the veteran is flagged and he goes, sorry, guys, that was me, that was me, that was me. I want to see that one time. I don't want to see it a second time. I certainly don't want to see it a third. So there might be like a professional foul where you go, okay, he had me beat and I grabbed him, so it wouldn't be a 50-yard touchdown. But when you're doing it six times in 3 weeks, which he's done, then you start saying, is it his hamstring? Is it his speed? Is it his body? Is it his reading of the play? So he's just come back down to earth, like you said, Jack. Not every post is a winner, but it's good when these form struggles happen in wins where the defense otherwise has four interceptions.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah. Do we talk about Jasir Taylor? Because I could have wrung his neck from 16,000 miles away.
Is this the holding on fourth and three?
There's that. There's that play you just mentioned where Taheb still, you know, goes to undercut the route, ends up chasing down Ray McLeod 63 yards later because Molden's going over to make the tackle and Jasir comes in from the side and actually takes Molden out of the play. What happened to the Jasir Taylor that we had that was forcing fumbles on special teams? He's overrunning every kick catcher. It just sort of seems lost. If there's one defensive player that's been on the roster or was on the roster prior to Minter coming in that's regressed, it's him. And it's really hard to fathom. But hey, you know, you can't fix all the holes and all the depth issues when injuries arrive in or overnight or in one season. But yeah, he's starting to become pretty costly. And
there seems something we're not, Andy, because he keeps playing and he keeps getting more snaps. And you've got to think, is he doing something intangible? Is he a guy who really knows stuff and he's getting guys lined up? I know Taheb's still credited. Well, to give him his dues, Taheb still said before the snap on Still's first interception, Jasir's yelled out to him, be ready for this because of the way they're lined up. They're going to do this route concept. Drive on the ball or something like that.
Practice what you preach.
Yeah, exactly. Like, why don't you just jump on the sideline, buddy? Just jump on the sideline and just tell him.
Put a headset on.
He'll be a good coach. Do as I say, not as I do. So maybe that's what he can be.
Right. And you've got to think he's playing probably for his career, right? Because, you know, slot cornerbacks are not as, I mean, they're perhaps a little easier to find than outside corners. But actually, that's a very good segue. Perhaps before we transition, Andy, I don't mean to take over your role. Before we go to the offense, just maybe a little of a bit of a, I did see a lot of people blaming Joe Ortiz about this wide receiver group and perhaps this group on offense just not being good enough. So we're going to play a little game. Shouldn't take too long. And listeners, you can do along. You can play along as you want as well. I'm going to ask each of you, I'm just going to say a statement about what Joe Ortiz has done since he's been at the Chargers. And all I want is a yes or no from you to say that yes, it was a good decision or no, it was a bad decision. Okay. There's no middle ground. I'm just going to say, and it's probably from almost his day dot. And what I'm going to do, there's 37 of them. And we're going to do this really quickly. And then I'm going to throw to someone else to have a quick chat. And then I'm going to tally up the scores and give him a grade. Okay. Does that make sense? Yep. All right, Alistair, I'm starting with you. First thing, release Eric Kendricks. Yes or no?
Yeah, great decision.
Andy, released Mike Williams. Yes or no?
Great decision. Yes.
Signed Gus Edwards, Alistair. Yes or no?
Yes. Right process. Outcome not great so far.
Andy, signed Puna Ford. Yes or no?
Yes.
Alistair, Hayden Hurst signed.
No.
Andy, signed Denzel Perryman.
Yes.
Alistair, signed Christian Fulton.
Yes.
I'm not going to say names anymore. We'll just go back and forth. Signed J.K. Dobbins.
Yes.
Signed DJ Chark.
Yeah. He filled a void that Williams left. It just hasn't worked. You can't grade the outcome. Process is right. Hey,
gut reactions. Yes. Signed Bradley Bozeman. Signed Bradley Bozeman.
Yes.
Extended Aloha Gilman.
Tao's going to kill you. That's a no. yes, right call. Not working out well.
Signed Will Disley.
Yes.
Signed Troy Dye.
Yep.
Re-signed Foster Sorrell.
No.
Signed Bud Dupree, Alistair.
Yes.
Wow. Okay, Andy, drafted Junior Colson.
Yes.
Drafted Tahib Steele. Easy.
Yes.
Drafted Cam Hart.
Yes.
Drafted Kamani Vidal.
No. I liked it, but center would be good.
Big one. Drafted Brendan Rice.
Yes.
Ooh. Drafted Cornelius Johnson.
Yep. Made sense in the spot.
Drafted Justin Ebwoigby.
yes.
Drafted Joe Alt.
Yep.
Drafted Ladd McConkey. I don't even need to ask those ones.
Yes, sir.
Signed Tony Jefferson.
Yes.
Alistair. Yes. Signed Tucker Fisk, Andy.
No.
Interesting. Signed Tier Tart. We're almost there.
Yep.
Signed Sam Mustafa, Andy.
No.
Traded a 2026 seventh rounder for Elijah Molden.
Yes, fantastic.
Yeah, traded a conditional 2025 pick for Taylor Heinicke.
Yes.
Re-signed Cameron Dicker through 2028.
Oh, yeah.
Signed Jalen Reagor.
Yes.
Signed Eli Apple.
Yeah, he's played well on the field.
Yep. Cut AJ Finley.
Yes.
Ooh, exercised fifth-year option on Rashawn Slater.
Must, yep.
Traded Keenan Allen for a 2024 fourth rounder.
This is bullshit. He's getting all the easy ones. No.
Ooh, good choice. Last one, Alistair, restructured Mac and Bosa.
Yeah, that was incredible. Never thought it would happen.
All right, give me a minute or so, and I'll tally these up, and I'll give you an overall draft score. But Andy or Alistair, take it away.
All right.
Yeah. Well,
I was just going to say, let's jump onto the offensive side of the ball, brother.
Let's do it.
Because, that was not the most enthralling offensive performance. Justin Herbert throws for 147 yards. Lou will fumble the ball twice. But five sacks from a team that has generated next to no, in fact, the league's worst defensive outfit for pressuring the quarterback. Let's start there. Let's start with the offensive line and Justin Herbert getting sacked five times.
Well, who's to blame is the question. And I think it's terribly fitting for our show that the week where we kind of urge patience of the listeners about G-Row, we say that the All-22 has been looking okay. Guys are getting open. Maybe this game's not so bad. This is probably the least defensible of his efforts as a play caller. Like, when I see 11 rush attempts for the entire game and each of those backs had at least one explosive run on the few carries they got, that makes me question things. Especially, as you said, you've allowed the Falcons to double their sack total for the year. Since that's happening, you would have thought maybe you pivot to more of a ground and pound game, the way the game was presenting itself. So Greg Roman, we've been defending you a little bit. This was a game where it seemed Herbert held onto the ball. Guys weren't getting open. Raheem Morris had a jump on you defensively. Players were being covered. You didn't have a lot of counter punches. The offense scored 2 points in the second half. What a 2 points it was. You've never heard Jim Harbaugh or coaches speak up Josh Palmer's 2-point conversion more in your life. But it ain't going to cut it, guys. It's getting worse and worse each week. So I'm getting to the point where he's now on notice. You can't keep doing this in second halves. I don't care what the excuse is. I know each game is different and sometimes you've got a milk clock or sometimes you've got a pass to win. You can't be getting 7 points or fewer every single week in the second half. No bueno. So I didn't really talk about the line there, but to say like what caused those
five... You answered the question just like Jim Harbaugh does in all of his press conferences.
Well, look, I only saw the line responsible for two of the five sacks, put it that way. I thought Pipkins, one of them, alt on another one, but Herbert's got 3 seconds to throw. Guys wide receivers aren't getting open, and it's either because of scheme or they're not good enough. Jack, have we bought you enough time to read us some results, mate?
Yes. So I guess on the, you know, through that whole quick little game, Chef Ortiz is hitting it close to 84% out of all those moves. So that is close to what you consider a very, very strong A, if not close to an A+. A+ is probably above 90. However, has he looked after the weapons that Justin Herbert is throwing to? That's the big question. So far, it feels like Greg Roman has done enough to at least mystify me a little bit and go, oh no, the scheme's actually okay. Maybe it's not too bad. But this, as you alluded to, Alistair, was pretty poor. And I did actually have some time last night to watch the All-22. And credit where credit is due, the Falcons, from my perspective, showed a lot of pre-snap movement. There was a lot of line shifts. I think Street and Ebiketie and Grady Jarrett had really good games and they confused Bozeman and Pipkins, even Zion Johnson a number of times. And they had just powerful too. I think there was a lack of power inside as well. Slater had another exceptional game. But what was happening on the back end, they seemed to know Roman's scheme. They were covering it. The safeties they weren't biting on too much. And there was one play that I shared with you guys offline. It was a pretty, I can't remember the actual play. I think it was a third down play. And you had McConkie, Disley, and I think it might have been Palmer all sit down in the middle of the field. And they were in a triangle. And I think QJ was out on a sort of going down the field. And Herbert had them all open, but just looked confused and sort of tucked it and went to run with it. So, yeah. And I've never seen Justin Herbert as pissed off as well. He looked very angry coming off the field. So whether Morris has just prepared the Falcons really well and they came out to play and we just weren't, but Roman wasn't ready for the scheme, I'm not too sure. But it's not looking good offensively. It's really not looking good, Andy.
No, it's not. It is a combination. I mean, communication breakdowns. There are a couple of instances where you see the rushers pull across the line and there's not really like a handover of responsibilities. Instead, on one sack, Bozeman ends up sort of trawling out around the backside of Joe Alt and ends up on his backside. Herbert gets sacked. where you sort of thought maybe Pipkins can take that off him. I don't know exactly what the plan is for them in that instance, but it just seemed like there were a few, like you said, Jack, some of the movements, the pre-snap movements, the shifts from the defensive line were just confusing the five guys up front for the Chargers. Herbert had 3.21 seconds to throw the ball, and on average took 3.87 to throw when under pressure. He converted pressures to sacks was up around 42%, which is crazy. So there's a combination, obviously, of...
Highest of his career.
Highest of his career, absolutely. There's a combination of failures on the offensive line. Raheem Morris just outcoached Greg Roman, something silly. Sticky coverage, just, you know. And Herbert's still not really wanting to throw the ball away, right? He's hanging on to it and going, oh, can I sneak out here? Makes that decision to sort of break up through the pocket too late. Ends up getting eaten up.
Well, they were ready for that this week.
Yeah.
If it was the way the edge players were setting to kind of contain, a bit like how you'd play Patrick Mahomes, dare I say it, that they've watched their tape too. They know the last 3 weeks Herbert's been dangerous with his legs, even though they didn't explicitly use the spy all the time. It didn't work this week.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'll just share the numbers because I think they are worthy sharing of what, offline listeners, is that I wanted to also highlight how much or how important J.K. Dobbins is to this offense and making it look good, because J.K. Dobbins at the moment ranks 21st in the league in yards before contact. So that means he's running. How many yards can you get before he's hit? He's either tackled or he's hit. Conversely, Dobbins is ranked 5th in yards after contact. That disparity is insane, right? So what that tells you, listeners, is that J.K. Dobbins doesn't get very deep in his runs before he gets hit, but he does a heck of a good job of being able to keep his feet and then get another 3, 4, 5 yards. And I think that alone has perhaps shaded or kind of put a bit of a facade on what on the running game Greg Roman has schemed up, and the holes perhaps that we have, they've kind of covered the holes that we've got on the interior, and also maybe just the scheme in general. But I tell you what, not having J.K. Dobbins next week and perhaps the week after, or this coming week and the week after, it's a huge, huge effort, because we know that Gus Edwards is not J.K. Dobbins, and Kamani Vidal has some major issues in pass protection and seems to really struggle picking up blitzes. So I don't know. I don't know where to go. I'm a bit worried, actually. This is the first time this year I'm going, oh, God.
And I wish it got better on the outside, but no, it doesn't. I mean, if you start moving outwards from the interior, Will Disley, who's been awesome this year, has 0 catches, 0 yards in this game. And you push out further and further, ignore Ladd McConkey, who we've already said is just having an incredible, incredible season. Josh Palmer's not taken that step. We're lucky if he's having 1 or 2 catches. Yes, they're often pretty catches. So it's frustrating with him because he kind of has some abilities, but he is your definition of the jack of all trades. He doesn't have a key skill. It's not route running. It's not contested ball. It's not speed. So he can go missing against a good cornerback. QJ, he did the opposite of what we asked from him, Jack. We said, how are you going to respond to adversity? He didn't do it in this game. What just shows up more and more is his route running, it just is not going to cut it against AJ Terrell. He can't get separation. And I'll turn it into a question. Do you think that Greg Roman is using QJ any better than Kellen Moore did, specifically focused on the last 3 weeks? If you're looking at the types of routes he's being asked to run and how he's winning or losing, how do you feel about the way he's being used?
No. It's not. He's not a burner. He's not a contested catch guy. He's not a guy that looks over his shoulder and actually high points the ball. So he's far better off, I don't know, in those crossing routes, using the speed, using his agility. But to just go, Andy, I'll throw to you after this one and answer that about QJ. Just to see, there was a perfect example of where QJ's head's at, and it was the failed block that he misses on AJ Terrell when Herbert laterals out to McConkey. And if you watch the tape, what actually happens is that QJ looks at Terrell. McConkey's lined up just behind QJ, looks at him once, and then doesn't look at him again and faces left, watches the snap. When's it going to happen? He doesn't notice that Terrell actually moves across following McConkey a little bit. The ball snapped. QJ goes, oh, yep, goes to block, and he's blocking space and goes, oh, my God, where is he? And misses the block completely. McConkey gets blown up. So that game awareness is just not even there. So that, to me, out of all of the things that I saw from QJ, is really, really worrisome, because that's coaching and that's just being confident in going, okay, I actually know what I'm doing on this play. So not great.
And is the play calling helping you there, where you're calling your tunnel screen on the play where you're relying on QJ to defend AJ Terrell, he's like a Marshawn Lattimore style animal, where he's an aggressive corner? That was an embarrassing play. Fuck, QJ is in so much trouble, guys. He's in a lot of trouble. He's not even playing like a fifth or sixth round pick. He's playing like my mum out there. And I love my mum, but I would never, ever have her suiting up in the powder blues, ever.
Oh, God.
It was your dad's birthday today, though, wasn't it? Happy birthday to Chris Lloyd.
Happy birthday, Chris.
Happy birthday, Chris Lloyd.
Stay off Facebook, mate.
It is all mental for me. Yeah. You look at it, the instance like that, a play like that, where you talk about when a player in their first 3 years, still inside their rookie deal, the game looks like it slows down around them. The game looks like it's too fast for him. And that was the perfect example, where he's looking in at the snap, and I know exactly what you're saying, Jack. The experienced Terrell just shifts a meter just to get an angle on McConkey. Ball snapped. QJ didn't even realize he was in Atlanta at that minute. For mine. He's on another planet. And then the immediate reaction as soon as Terrell's passed him is like head in hands. I don't know. I don't think, especially in the last 3 weeks, Greg Roman has been scheming QJ in the right way. He's a yards after catch guy, like you said, shallow crosses, get the ball and go, putting him on go routes, contested catch stuff. It's not working, and it's not going to work if he's not being able to execute in areas where he can. And they're not allowing him to gain any confidence. There's no quick little get the ball in his hands early in the game, build that confidence. Cause you know, like Al said, every game is its own entity, its own little island, but QJ just, he's out on the raft. He's chasing Wilson through the waves.
Wilson!
Like, yeah, it's sad to see. And obviously the online hate is not doing him any favors at all.
No.
Doesn't matter how much Brennan Rice is stepping in to defend him on X, that stuff, it's culminating into a bad spot for him. So look, don't need to say too much more, but obviously Ladd McConkey, incredible game, 9 receptions, 117 yards. Has he re-injured his shoulder? What has he done to his knee? Concerns there that, you know, bit of chat, I'm not sure. Harbaugh, obviously, cards close to his chest, whether he may miss a game or two. But if he does, then how is this offense going to score points next week? And for as many games as McConkey is not in the lineup, that is the big concern. Jack, you offline, I don't know if you can quickly just get these stats about Greg Roman and opting to throw to running backs. Because getting Tucker Fisk and Scott Matlock in the receiving game out on the flat cannot be the answer. Simply cannot. I made a joke during the game with Matlock and Tucker Fisk standing next to each other on the sideline, both looking at each other like, hey, we both caught a ball. How good's this? Unbelievable. Unbelievable that is included in any kind of like, yeah, this is good. Herbert, no wonder Herbert came off the ground and cracked the shits. I'd be too.
if we're looking, listeners, for Greg Roman to try something different. And Alistair, you called for it a number of weeks ago, and they actually did it the game after from, I can't remember when it was, but they threw a couple of passes out to JK Dobbins and he busted through. But this is, again, interesting, some stuff. You can tell that school's quietening down because I'm sitting at my desk doing nothing, just looking at stats. Guess where Greg Roman's Baltimore offense ranked for targeting RBs in Lamar Jackson's 2019 MVP season. They would be 30th, 2020, 27th, 2021. That's 30th back again, 2022, 27th. So this man does not throw the ball to running backs at all, even when the offense is absolutely humming, which those Baltimore offenses were. Conversely, Herbert's gone from in 2020 in his rookie season, the Chargers were fourth in the league targeting the running back. In 2021, they were 16th. In 22, they were first. In 2023, they were 28th. And in 2024, we are the 31st team in the NFL for targeting the running back. So I have no idea what this offense is going to do without McConkie and without J.K. Dobbins against the Chiefs. And I'm officially going to put Greg Roman on notice. I think it's time we did it. I think we need to. We're on notice. You're going to have to do something, buddy, because Chef Ortiz will do his thing in the offseason. We're talking 84% strike rate and the moves that he made. We might see a different offense next year, but this team with this defense can make a run, perhaps into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen, Al?
Yep. Agree. We'll find out, but we'll get to our game predictions, but I dare say neither of the three of us are going to be feeling too good. All right, shall we move into our awards? I will start us.
Yeah, I just want to raise a rhetorical question. Why, Mr. Head Coach Jim Harbaugh, are you deciding to utilize a fake punt at your own 36, up 4 points on fourth
the
and
man is drunk.
When your quarterback's Justin Herbert? You've got J.K. Scott rolling out almost as he gets the snap, telegraphing the fake play. And it's to Stone Smart, and you've got Tucker Fisk, Hassan Haskins, Tuli Pelotu, and Josh Harris getting over there for the protection. I think it was Hassan Haskins fell over nothing, and Kevin King makes a great stop and turns the ball over in Falcons territory. I don't need an answer from you. I just think it's absolutely vital that that gets brought up, because that's crazy business.
And, you know the offense is cooked when that's happening. Yeah. Even Harbaugh's doing that.
So the interesting thing is, I was about to go to the snakes and ladders, and I've got the snakes this week, and Andy's take the snake right out of my mouth.
Did he really?
He's just done my entire snake. But I'll pivot, because that's what we do in TDU. We pick each other up and we move stuff around and we just say whatever's on our mind.
Unlike our offensive line.
I will give the snake to Greg Roman. We've just been talking about him. I will say, on your point, Andy, throwing the ball to Tucker Fisk and Scott Matlock. What's coming to me, what I'm thinking of, are some comments Jim Harbaugh has made, pumping up Greg Roman's tires, saying, hey, this guy is a chess player. If you know, I might be able to think one or two moves ahead, but oh, Giro, if he played chess, he would be five, he would be six, he'd be seven moves ahead. If your idea of chess is throwing the fucking ball to Tucker Fisk and Scott Matlock, that's the type of chess you play at Thanksgiving against your 10-year-old niece when you're letting her win because you don't have a clue what you're doing out there. So, Greg, we want to see some real 4D chess from you this week against Spags, who's won three or four, maybe even five Super Bowls at this point. Show us something. You're down the snake, Greg Roman.
Yeah, nice. Sorry. About time I got you back, though.
Yeah.
For that one. Up the ladder for me, I'm looking at Derwin James, best performance of the year. I'm looking Tahib Still, two wins, one pick six, great PBU. But I'm splitting the award this week between Joe Ortiz and Jesse Minter. Ortiz continues to provide munitions for Jesse Minter to weaponize. Tony Jefferson, veteran offseason safety acquisition, matched this week by the waiver off the waiver signing of Marcus May to replace Gilman. Utilizing these two in the deep part of the field, Minter was allowed to then put Derwin into positions to help win the game. 44 of 80 snaps in the slot as the nickel defender. Derwin was awesome around the box and at the line of scrimmage. instrumental, as we've said, with 8 individual tackles, 3 stops in the run game, average depth of 1.4 yards per tackle, and 2 yes. TFLs, which were sensational. So, and the interception, once again, Derwin ends the game with his own hands, this time hanging onto it for the stat sheet. Couldn't be happier for the man. Good job, all involved.
That leaves right my on. Teachable moment. And this week's teachable moment is brought to you by over-centralization. We can learn a lot from the ancient world, and the game against the Falcons has made me reach back even further than last week's Battle of Agincourt to the Great Library of Alexandria. One of the most ambitious projects of the ancient world, its construction was intended to house every piece of knowledge available to humanity. Established under the reign of Ptolemy II in the 3rd century BCE, it became a hub for scholars and intellectuals from across the Mediterranean and beyond. Its mission was to centralize all learning in one place, collecting scrolls and manuscripts from ships docking in Alexandria and from expeditions to faraway lands. But that centralization became its greatest weakness. By depending so heavily on one repository, no matter how incredible it may be, the ancient world exposed itself to catastrophic loss. Over centuries, the library suffered repeated disasters, fires, political instability, and invasions. Each calamity eroded its contents, and because so much knowledge was concentrated there without duplication elsewhere, countless works were lost forever. What seemed like a symbol of strength became a symbol of fragility, as the reliance on one central hub left the intellectual infrastructure of the ancient world vulnerable to collapse. You might see where I'm going here. The Chargers are walking a similar tightrope with their offense. Ladd McConkey, whilst he was spectacular against the Falcons, 117 of 147 yards from Justin Herbert, but this overdependence mirrors the flaw of the Great Library of Alexandria. What happens when defenses inevitably find ways to neutralize him? Ladd's shoulder and his knee looked a bit sore, and his grimacing through his helmet showed signs of physical erosion. McConkey takes up almost 25% of all targets from Herbert, with the next closest being Will Disley at approximately 16%. Without a diversified supporting cast and a more creative, talent-aligned, play-calling approach, the offense risks crumbling under its own centralization. Just as the ancient world learned the hard way that spreading knowledge, not centralizing it, is crucial for resilience and prosperity, Roman, Harbaugh, Herbert, and the offense must recognize the importance of spreading the ball to more weapons if they want to balance their offense to endure into the postseason. In other words, Roman needs to channel Johann Gutenberg of 1440 to get innovating a system that allows for diversification, which is the printing press,
yeah,
not centralization.
And
if not, hush in the quiet. It's my soapbox and I'm standing on it. If we don't do that, then the 2024 playbook may as well turn to dust like the many disappeared tomes once contained in the Great Library of Alexandria. Now you can talk. Class dismissed.
I was going to say the Gutenberg press sounds like a defensive scheme. I wasn't sure if I don't think the Romans did sack Alexandria or light up the library, but Greg Roman is sacking our offense. So,
yeah,
nailing it week after week. Andy, let's take us home. We're waffling on like nothing else this week. Bring some order to the chaos.
We're really channeling the Chargers offense of the week. So we're just, you know, just hoping that someone comes along and just wafts us through. But we're on to week 14 against the vaunted Chiefs. A lot of sweat, as we've said, will be poured out over the prognosis of Ladd McConkey's injuries, whether he misses a week or two, or whether the Georgia Bulldog has the warrior spirit to get himself healthy for the trip over to KC. Look, it's always an interesting one heading to Arrowhead. Herbert has performed well there. The Chiefs narrowly escaped complete embarrassment, winning thanks to the men in black and white, 19-17, with the botched snap that the play was called dead, and then the Converge referee said, nah, we'll uphold it. We'll let the Chiefs win again. So it's going to be really interesting to see. It's not been quite a powerful season from the Chiefs. I think they are the statistically the worst 11-1 team in history with a point differential of plus 54, which, you know, goes to say that if you take those 11 wins separate from the one loss, they're winning by less than 5 points a game, which, you know, with the woes of the offense at the moment, does still give the Chargers some hope. Not too much, but a little bit. So look, let's get into some opening headlines, fellas, because I reckon the Kansas City take luck on the Chargers' injury misfortunes. And as I've said, with the point differential, without Dobbins and Ladd McConkey, it would take something of Chiefs' fortune for the Chargers to outscore them at Arrowhead.
My first and only headline is, have you learned from me, brother? Have you learned from me? And I want to see us go in, be aggressive, fourth down, go for it, take the game away from Patrick Mahomes, take the opportunities away from them for the referees to call ridiculous calls, go for it, go for it, go for it. Win the game with your flag held high. If you lose, you've left it all on the field. That's all I'm going to say. Don't give Andy Reid a chance. Don't tunnel up. Don't curl up. Just go aggressive. Herbert, I wouldn't even be too worried if you threw an interception. Just go for it, boys.
Fourth and Staley, says Jack. My headline for this week, the devil you know or the devil you don't. We're all aware of Travis Kelce, but at the moment it is actually sidekick Noah Gray, listeners, who arguably poses the greater threat of the two. Would you believe the last 4 weeks, Kelce has had twice the number of targets of Noah Gray, but Kelce's had 199 yards and one touchdown. Gray's had 165 yards and four touchdowns, despite half the target share. So we have to be wary that he, at this stage, is a little faster, more dynamic, dare I say it, than Travis Kelce. I'm not saying let Travis Kelce run riot, because Mahomes has still targeted at him 100 times this year, and he was productive against the Raiders, but just be mindful, it is a two-headed beast at the tight end position for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, and then you've got to factor in Xavier Worthy, DeAndre Hopkins, Justin Watson's getting involved as well. Like, they've got a healthy backfield, Kareem Hunt, Isaiah Pacheco. It's balls to the wall this week. Jack, you're spot on, my friend. My last one, Chargers head to Kansas City knowing what to expect from the refs after numerous missed calls in the Falcons win. How, I think it was D. Alford wasn't called for targeting or illegal contact on McConkey, just blows my mind. But at least it puts the Chargers in a little bit of a headspace knowing what's ahead. So what are the keys to victory, Jack?
We say it every single time we play Mahomes. Pressure him, but don't overcommit. Get him, don't allow him out of the pocket. That's when he operates at his best, and they seem to just be fluking absolutely everything at the moment. Keep him in the pocket. Listen, there. I know you just talked about Noah Gray and how well he's playing. Realistically, the way we played last week against the Falcons, we have a better secondary unit than their wide receivers. So force Mahomes to throw the ball. Don't allow him to, I don't know, what do you call it? Free ball? No, that's when you don't wear underpants. I'm not sure. What's it called? Just play free? I don't know. Something like that. Anyway, I'm losing it. I'm losing it. I'm losing it.
I'm going to take a rare opportunity to have a shot at the way Coach Harbaugh's using personnel and Greg Roman. This is the week to bring out DJ Chark. And it will be a shame if it takes a McConkey injury to bring out DJ Chark. So DJ Chark played two snaps last week, and I think it is disappointing that we're given the issues and woes on offense that we have not shaken things up a little bit more. I know Harbaugh was grilled about this by Daniel Popper, and he basically said the opportunity's there if he wants to take them, which reading between the lines says he's not practicing very well. But Jack, there are some lazy people like me who maybe don't practice that well, but then you never know, that person, unless you give them a go on the field when it matters, they can really surprise you. And Chark's a guy who's had 1,000 yards receiving in an NFL season and reportedly played really well during training camp, had chemistry with Herbert. So I almost don't care what he looks like at training camp, during the week of training. The facts are Palmer had one catch. QJ looks like a not like a Canadian football player out there. And nothing's happening with Disley. Change something, do something different against the Chiefs. Sunday Night Football, give yourselves a chance to win. That's one chess key for me.
Dare I say, this is the chess move. This is Roman. Checkmate. Chark. Yeah, checkmate, Chark. There we go. Okay, I need
gambit.
To stop.
The Chark.
There, good one.
Pass rush opportunity returns for a group who's been pretty quiet the last 10 quarters at least. Mahomes is on track not only to throw for the most interceptions in a season for him, but his pressure to sack percentage is 20.4%, a full 7% higher than his 2021 season.
Mm.
He's releasing the ball the fastest he has in his career, barring his first full season in 2018 at 2.83, but has 11 interceptions and 12 turnover-worthy plays. So if he gives you the opportunity, there's a good chance it's a good one. Come back with a vengeance. Bosa, Mac, Thule, Bud, big opportunity. Injure that frog.
That line's not that good either. I've got to say, the real weakness is that left side. Wanye Morris got murdered by the Raiders, and that they signed DJ Humphreys, the Cardinals' left tackle, and it's all a matter of when's he ready to play because he hasn't played all year. And at the moment, it's either Wanye Morris, Kingsley Suamataya, and that might explain, Andy, why Mahomes' pressure to sack rate is the highest it's ever been. The left side of the line is a sieve, and the right side with Juwan Taylor's not much better. Unfortunately, Jack, the interior three positions is clearly the best in the NFL.
Yeah. All right, result predictions, fellas. I just find it really hard with the way that it's sitting for the Chargers to outscore the Chiefs at Arrowhead. So it's going to be 17 Chiefs, 13 Chargers for me.
Yeah, I'm very similar. 20-17 Chiefs.
This one hurts me because I felt like going with the Chiefs, given how well our defense is playing, and it looks like they're ripe for the picking, guys. They keep asking to lose games of football to the Panthers, to the Broncos with a blocked field goal. But the way we're playing, they still have the second best run defense in the NFL. I'm just not confident enough that we can score enough points on offense to get it done, even with Justin Herbert, especially if Ladd doesn't play. So Chiefs 24, Chargers 19, and it's 8-5, and we'll need to have a win against the Bucks or the Broncos.
Yeah. Well, there you have it, guys. Sorry, Athir, that we have not picked the Chargers to win, but we'll wait and see. We'll wait and see come Sunday night football. We're playing Sunday night? We're just playing, night football at Arrowhead. Happy to be wrong, as always. Now, ordinarily, guys, we'll do some NFL headlines. We did have something a little bit more expansive to do, but we're sort of running out of time tonight. And next week's our 100th episode, so we're going to pocket it, save it for then, have a great fun show next week. Have an awesome weekend, an awesome week. Hopefully the Chargers get up. But thanks for joining us, and we will see you next time on Thunder Down Under. All right.
Bye.
Firing, he's got Floyd turning, got it, zigzag, 10, 5, high step, touchdown, San Diego!
Good night to all!